Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 29, Cadwalla, the King from the Forest. Upon the abdication of Kentwina in 685, the Gwisa were thrown into chaos. From the forests on their eastern frontier came news of an exiled nobleman massing an army to press his claim to the throne. He'd already cut his teeth on the South Saxons by driving out their king and facing a revolt by his nobles. But now he was looking to return home to seize the opportunity of an empty throne. His name was Cadwalla, and though he would reign for only 3 years, they would be some of the most transformative years in the history of Wessex. But that transformation would be a bloody one, and would draw the people of the southwest into the violent contest that was Anglo-Saxon power politics, thereby remaking them, and eventually remaking England as a whole. But who was this Cadwalla? Bede says he was from a noble family, and lived for about 30 years, so he was born probably around 658. Regnal lists have him as a descendant of Ceolwulf, but we've already seen how much the compilers of those lists attempted to fit West Saxon history into an unbroken line of descent from Serdich, so we must be wary. Bede says only that he was a member of the Gwisan royal house. His name, as I've mentioned before, is some indication of his, at least ethnic, background. Cadwalla is an anglicised form of the Brittonic name Cadwallon, meaning that he probably had some British ancestry. As I discussed in the first episode on the Gwisa, this wasn't exactly unusual. In fact, most of the early kings of the Gwisa have anglicised Brittonic names. Thus, Cadwalla having such a name doesn't necessarily disqualify him from being Gwisan nobility. In fact, depending on how widespread intermixing was between the Saxons and the Britons in this area, it may support the idea that he was from a noble house, which had at some point married with local British nobility. Another part of Cadwalla's life that is open to some controversy are his religious beliefs. The different sources for his life agree that he wasn't baptised until his death in 688. The evidence doesn't say that he was pagan, though. On the contrary, the image emerges of a man deeply concerned with the church. Wilfrid, the troublesome Northumbrian bishop discussed in the episodes on Oswiu, Edgefrith and Aldfrith, was a close spiritual advisor of Cadwalla from the time of his first conquest of Sussex. As king, Cadwalla was a patron of churches and founder of monasteries, as any good Christian king would be. So then why wasn't he baptised until his death? Well, especially during the missionary period, it wasn't uncommon for men to hedge their bets in a way, by holding off baptism until they were on their deathbeds. This way their sins could be forgiven when they knew they wouldn't be able to commit any more. The preference of child baptism was ancient by this time, but in missionary societies, where there was no shortage of unbaptised adults, a pragmatic attitude to baptism isn't unusual. As has been a recurring theme throughout this series, nobles in exile, much like soldiers in foxholes, tend to find God pretty quickly. Depending on his background, this may well have been the case with Cadwalla, although we don't have any records of him staying with Christian kings. Plus, by this time, the Gwisa had been converted to Christianity, and seemed to have survived the rocky period immediately after a conversion, when pagan backsliding was a distinct possibility. So while Cadwalla may have been pagan at this time, it's also entirely possible that he was in fact Christian, albeit an unbaptised one. given the attitudes to baptism which dominate in a missionary society, he may have opted to remain unbaptized so as to ensure that he would die with his sins forgiven. And judging by his activity from 685 to his death in 688, he certainly had quite a few sins to forgive. One of our main sources for the life of Caedwalla is the saint's life of the Bishop Wilfrid, who served as something of Caedwalla's spiritual advisor during his reign. In this life, we find our first references to Caedwalla. There he's described as an exiled noble, living with his warriors in the forests of the Chiltern and the Weald, on the border between Gewissa and the smaller kingdoms of Sussex, Surrey and Jutish Hampshire. During his exile, he seems to have massed support, and in 685, according to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, he began to contend for the kingdom. Note, it doesn't necessarily say that he became king in 685, only that he began to struggle for the kingship of the Gewissa. His first move was to invade the kingdom of Sussex with his troops and to kill the South Saxon king Aethelwale. He ruled Sussex seemingly for a few months before being expelled by a revolt of the ealdormen. After this, Caedwalla was able to take the throne of the Gewissa. Kentwina had abdicated in 685, and this seems to have left a power vacuum into which Caedwalla was able to insert himself, probably on the back of his military success in Sussex. Bede says that he overthrew the underkings who had ruled since the time of Kenweal, but as discussed in the last episode, this is probably a reflection of the propaganda put about by Caedwalla's successor and Bede's near contemporary Ina, rather than the actual reality of the situation. In truth, we don't actually know how Caedwalla came to be on the throne of Gewissa. Given his treatment of Sussex, it's tempting to imagine that he took the throne by force, but if he did, it's not recorded, beyond the Chronicle's enigmatic claim that he began to, quote, contend for the kingdom, end quote. But the Chronicle is heavily based on Bede, and so the claim that he began to contend for the kingdom may well be a reference to Bede's claim that he overthrew the sub-kings. Therefore, we can't actually say anything about how Caedwalla became king of Gewissa, only that by the end of 685, he was indeed king of Gewissa. Once in this position and with the might of the Gewissa at his disposal, Caedwalla turned his eyes again to Sussex, where he killed the ealdorman who had expelled him and reduced the South Saxons to a state of servitude. He didn't stop at Sussex either. Caedwalla wanted to bring all of the Saxon and Jutish peoples south of the Thames under his rule. To that end, he also invaded the Isle of Wight, and we're told that he killed all the male members of the royal house, but not before allowing them, or possibly forcing them, to be baptised, since the Isle of Wight was still resolutely pagan at this time. And he then engaged in an unsuccessful attempt at ethnic cleansing, where he tried to exterminate the native Jutish population and replace it with Gewissans. We know that it was unsuccessful, partly because Bede says that in his own day, the population of the Isle of Wight still remained mostly Jutish. He also invaded Kent, and in 686, he set up his brother Mull as a king there. When Mull was burned to death by the Kentish people in a revolt the next year, Caedwalla then invaded again, and seems to have ruled Kent directly thereafter. Finally, in 688, he also issued a grant of land at Farnham in Surrey, indicating that he directly controlled that kingdom also. Thus, in the space of just a few years, Caedwalla had successfully imposed his overlordship of all the peoples south of the River Thames. Hi listeners, I wanted to take a second to tell you about the sponsor of today's episode, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, restaurant-quality, and dietitian-approved, and it's all ready to go in 2 minutes with minimal meal prep. I've had some fantastic meals like butter chicken and tomato risotto with Factor, and I've got to say, I've been extremely impressed with all of them. They genuinely are restaurant quality. You'll get over 35 different options to choose from every week if you try out Factor, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, with pancakes, smoothies, and more, there's over 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and ready to go throughout the day.
Factor also works around your schedule. You can order as little or as much as you need each week, and they even let you reschedule deliveries any time for when those unexpected somethings happen to pop up. And to top it all off, Factor is cheaper than ordering takeout, so it really is a smart move to try it out. Get started today and get after your goals. If you're interested in trying Factor, head to factormeals.com/anglo50 and use code anglo50 to get 50% off. That's code anglo50 at factormeals.com/anglo50 to get 50% off.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank our patrons over at Patreon. Janet Kearns, Jennifer Ross, Ramon Rodriguez, Patricia Scott, Wilfrith, Bruce Goodmanson, Adam Getzendana, George, Brandon Johnson, Flynn Hartwick, Holly Sinclair, Dante, Kathan, Catherine Robertson, Grace M. Teresa, and Che Christian Padron. Thank you for your support. It is all greatly appreciated. And if you'd like to be thanked as well, then you can be by going over to the show's Patreon and supporting us for $3, $5, or $10 a month, which will give you access to various things like, obviously, the shoutouts, the weekly bonus series that we're doing now, and more to come in the future. Other ways you can support us is by leaving a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're using, by leaving a review, which helps to boost the show through the algorithm. You can also subscribe, follow us, leave likes or hearts or whatever it is on whatever platform you use. Anything you can do helps to boost the show in the algorithm of these various sites, and it's all extremely helpful. And now, back to the show. Through his conquests, Cadwalla expanded Gawissa all the way to the eastern tip of Kent. This was a level of power that no Gawissan king had previously wielded. Yet despite this, Cadwalla abdicated after just 3 years to go on pilgrimage to Rome. Why has been the subject of debate. Possibly Wilfrid, who had been Cadwalla's spiritual advisor since his first conquest of Sussex, and who, if you'll recall, was a major partisan of Rome, possibly he encouraged Cadwalla to seek baptism at the hand of the Pope. Something that may have helped make him more open to the idea is a wound that Bede tells us he received in the conquest of Wight, which may have been so serious that Cadwalla knew he didn't have long to live. Indeed, Cadwalla died in Rome in 689, not long after travelling there, which may support the idea that he went on pilgrimage because he knew that he was dying. For its brevity, though, Cadwalla's reign marks a definite reorientation in Gawissan foreign policy. Previously, Gawissan expansion had come mainly at the expense of the Britons to the west, but now they turn their eyes onto their Germanic neighbours to the south and east. Prior to this, although they may have paid tribute to the Gawissa, these people had not been the targets of conquest of the kind Cadwalla unleashed on them. But why did he initiate this expansion? The most likely answer is that it was part of a move to secure Gawissa against Mercian expansion. In the last episode, I mentioned that this was probably responsible for the movement of the Gawissan royal focus out of the Upper Thames Valley to Winchester, as growing Mercian strength put the Upper Thames firmly in the Mercian sphere of influence. In the case of Cadwalla, his first conquest of Sussex may be linked to the alliance that we know existed between King Wulfhere of Mercia and the King Athelwale of Sussex. It was Wulfhere who sponsored Athelwale's baptism, and he even gifted him the Isle of Wight and southern Hampshire to rule as overlord. It seems then that the South Saxons were firmly in Mercia's pocket, and thus they were a threat to the Gawissa. This is probably why Cadwalla was so eager to remove Athelwale. Similar logic probably motivated his expansion elsewhere east of the Gawissa. His aim was probably to use the natural barrier of the Thames to create a Gawissan overlordship in the south of England, meant to rival that being built by the Mercians in the Midlands. It's hard not to see his expansion as a success. Indeed, it was such a success that it inspired the Gewissa to change their identity. Although they would always be Gewissa, if you remember, Bede said that Gewissa and West Saxon were interchangeable. It was from Caedwalla's reign on that they began to self-identify as West Saxons, and their kingdom can first be actually called Wessex, a fact which reflected their more multi-ethnic makeup. But this new identity was not born from any grand vision of Saxon unity. Rather, it was the product of tactical manoeuvring and the full entry of the Gewissa into the world of Anglo-Saxon international politics. By becoming West Saxons, Caedwalla and the Gewissa established themselves within a larger web of Anglo-Saxon and Jutish polities. Prior to this time, their eastern borders were hazy, their main focus being the Britons to the west. But now they were staking claim in the east also, establishing borders and forging diplomatic bonds with other Germanic groups. To some extent they had already been doing this, for example the reigns of Cynegils and Cenwealh, but under Caedwalla this became a more central aim of their foreign policy, as they sought to become a major player in Anglo-Saxon politics in their own right, rather than just a pawn in the games of the Northumbrians and the Mercians. Although he didn't live to see it, Caedwalla changed the Gewissa, and along with them, he planted the seed that would one day become the Kingdom of England. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Once again, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join us for the next episode, when we look at the reign of King Ina, the man who really built upon Caedwalla's legacy.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of the new Medal of Honor podcast from Evergreen Podcasts, brought to you in partnership with the National Medal of Honor Museum. In each 3-minute episode, we'll learn about a different service member who distinguished him or herself through an act of valor. We'll include stories from the Civil War to Iraq and Afghanistan, and from all branches of the military. We'll talk about service members who were overlooked for the medal at first due to their race or religion, and about those who were celebrated at the time. We'll hear stories of soldiers like Audie Murphy, future Hollywood star who mounted a burning tank to hold off German infantry in World War II. And people like Dr. Mary Edwards Walker, a Civil War Army doctor and the only woman to receive the Medal of Honor so far. Learn about these heroes and more wherever you get your podcasts.